Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome back to Blighty Day Fiancé, your 8th, 9th, or 10th favorite reality TV recap podcast. My name is Michelle, and I'm joined today by Mr. Elliot Wilson. Welcome, Elliot.
Hello, hello. It's a long time since I've been anybody's 8th, 9th, or 10th favorite anything, so I'm absolutely honored.
Well, we're absolutely honored to have you. So today we're going to be covering 90 Day the Other Way, Season 5, Episode 15. Now, in the past, this has been an omnibus, but as you have all been undoubtedly made aware by now, the Snark household has been overtaken, besieged by an upper respiratory virus that we're all still recovering from. And we decided that last week was just going to be a write-off. So it's no longer an omnibus for the time being. It's a single decker bus. It's just a bus. It's the 90 day, the other, it's a taxi. And Elliot is our driver. It's everything you've ever dreamed of. It's still a black cab. You're still getting the British experience or the UK experience. Tiny bits and pieces of housekeeping. If you want to hear our Fundy Bus coverage of Welcome to Plathville and Sister Wives, that's on our Patreon, patreon.com/blightyday. Blighty is spelled B-L-I-G-H-T-Y. Now, Love is Blind, we are going to cover. Robin and I will be doing a wrap-up to be recorded this weekend. Sorry it's a week late. Again, Robin still has a deadline at work, and we're just trying to fit everything in and make up for lost time as best we can. But as we all know, health comes first. We've got to prioritize that. Thank you again, Elliot, for stepping in. So yes, any questions? My DMs are open. You can find me on Facebook, Michelle Snark. You can come to our Instagram at Blighty Day. And you can email us at blightydayfiance@gmail.com. Now, without any further ado, let's get right into the episode. Now, I think we should start with Danielle and Johan. Not a particularly long segment here. Danielle says to us that they're going to see a life coach because, I guess, culturally, a therapist isn't a viable option or an acceptable option to Johan. And she says, I need someone to help me explain to Johan that the way he's engaging in this relationship is destroying it.
Well, I mean, the relationship in terms of longevity is sort of, I mean, it's looking like the Titanic early on the 12th of April, 1912, isn't it? I mean, you know, things are still fine. You know, the staff are still putting out the breakfast things, but you just know that in the long run, this is not going to be a viable option. I haven't seen as much of her as you have, and I accept that and factor that into any potential criticisms. I thought that there was a strange sort of duality about Danielle in that I find her manner very difficult, and I would find her manner very difficult one-to-one. Mm-hmm. Because she's very emphatic, she's very hectoring would be unfair, but she's very dogmatic. She wants very.
I think hectoring is pretty fair.
Oh well, let's go for hectoring then. Okay, yeah, she is very hectoring. At the same time, I think she's pretty much right about most things in terms of her relationship with Johan, because there is clearly a horrible, at best, a horrible, horrible semi-cultural mismatch. You know, irrespective of what people are entitled to want or expect out of a relationship, there is a huge divide between what each of them wants and expects and feels that the other deserves, to put it entirely neutrally. And that kind of divide is not easily crossed in my limited experience.
No, I would add to that that would be the case in... without the added cultural context, which is it's called different things in different parts of the world. In this particular part of the world, it's called, Johan would be called a Sankey Panky. So a sort of kept man of an older, wealthier, white woman or American woman or North American woman, I should say. Whether Danielle agrees with it or not, is it really fair for her to remove their relationship and their dynamic from that context entirely and try and disrupt it? I don't know. But I do sympathize. And I think we've also seen a nasty side of Johan coming out, particularly in the shaming her for not being able to have a child naturally. Due to her age, I think that's about as below the belt as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, that was just grim on a number of levels, wasn't it? It was, you know, the worst kind of blow from somebody who is supposed to be very close to you and meant with every bit of venom that you would expect. I mean,
oh yeah. On the other hand, he did come into this with expectations. I don't think she tried to disabuse him at any point of the notion that his life would be better with her. Easier, I should say, right? And I do believe him that she says one thing one day and another thing another. I don't think that she says what she means all the time. So I think on a day that she's trying to ingratiate herself, she might be kinder to him and she might be trying to sell him on this vision of a future together. And on the days when she's really in her feelings, then she's outraged when he asks for anything.
But
right?
There is a strange sort of dynamic about the two of them. And it's true of some of the other couples, but I think it's particularly acute in their case, which is that what's happened and the way things are going don't seem to me, as a relatively casual observer, to be vastly different from any arrangement they could possibly have foreseen. And yet, they still seem horribly, horribly affronted, upset, shocked by the way things have turned out. I mean, there's an element of the kind of, you know, statement of regret on behalf of the Leopards Ate My Face party about how somebody just ate your face and was a leopard. And you think, well, this was always on the cards. It's not like you went on a sort of luxury cruise and it turned out to be a sort of boot camp for the grotesquely overweight or something. I mean, there's no sort of massive shock, it seems to me. And yet they both seem, and one can't regulate people's feelings, they both seem quite upset about the way things have turned out.
Yeah, and I think that is spot on. But the conclusion is, in order to make our relationship better, he has to make some changes. But I think that the degree of control that she needs from, I think she thought she could have it by marrying someone who she felt that she could influence and kind of raise or teach or do a Pygmalion on. And he is not that guy.
No, I think she's mistaken kind of material dependence for emotional dependence. And I don't think he's got that on her in a way that she not necessarily actively wants, but that she kind of needs for the setup that she's envisioned.
She wants things that can't simultaneously exist. You can't have a younger kept man that you can teach who is also going to take the initiative when you want him to, and who's now he may physically be able to.
The phrase our Australians cousins uses to slip her a crippler. I think the problem is that from what little I can see of her sort of wants and needs from this relationship, and it's not unusual, is that she's basically angry because he's not the person in her head. And that makes her angry with him, understandably, but at the same time, inexplicably.
Right.
And it's also completely irresolvable because
yep.
He's never going to be the person in her head. Even if he knew what the person in her head looked like and tried to be that person, which would be quite a big requirement for somebody to stay in a relationship. I shall attempt to be your imaginary partner. It's a fool's errand. It's not going to work. And yet, unless you can detach yourself from this, this idealized version of a partner, it needn't actually be particularly idealized. In the sense of, you know, better than what you could expect or anything. It just needs to be this set sort of notion of what somebody will be, how they will act, what they will do. And if somebody unwittingly or without their control falls short of that, that's fatal, really.
Yeah, agreed. But their dog is really cute.
Yeah, but the dog's not going to make it on his own, is he? Or she?
No, the dog. No, he isn't. Gizmo is not. Let's head on over to Jaipur at day two of the wedding ceremony of TJ and Kimberly. Kimberly, who has hopefully got some Imodium in her, downed some Pepto. I totally appreciate that they want a translator to explain to them every single little thing that's going on. However, you've known you were getting married for a long time. I am sure TJ, the brother that she's fucking, or any number of English-speaking relatives, or a translator, or a wedding planner, or somebody could have explained to her at an earlier stage, this is what happens, this is what it's going to involve. Like, you didn't do any research ahead of time? I understand wanting to know what's going on and where you have to be, and you don't want to be late to things. But apart from the timekeeping, I don't think you, whether you're a spiritual person or not, I really don't think you need to be informed of the granular detail, because it doesn't matter.
And even if you feel for some reason that you should be, you know, there is an element of the Oliver Platt line in Lake Placid about, yes, they hide that information in books. I mean, you know, you can find out about these things. You know, I mean, I've been to one or two Indian weddings, and they are long. I mean, they just are. They're much longer than mm-hmm. any other wedding ceremonies I've been to. And there's, if you don't speak the language it's being conducted in, they are pretty impenetrable because you don't have any cultural norms or sort of signposts or milestones as you go along, because, you know, you most people in this country have probably been to a few Christian weddings, so they know roughly the architecture of the thing, at least, and you see them on television. Whereas if you go to, to a Hindu wedding, for example, you will not find much that is very familiar. So I get that. But expecting basically a sort of, DVD commentary version of the wedding, but done live for you. Firstly, it seems a bit demanding. Secondly, as you say, it doesn't seem particularly necessary. I mean, they are presumably not embracing the faith themselves. Although there was one point where I thought, I'm probably being unfair here, but I thought it was quite interesting, where the father said, you know, we want to understand what we're committing to, or that wasn't quite the phrase, but it was as if he sort of worried he was going to be conned into some weird religious promise out of which he could then not get.
I considered that myself. But then I thought, when Robin and I were watching this, Robin said to me, well, you know, it's not just for her. She has to manage the parents, her parents as well. And again, I understand, you know, she's upset. She's not in the mode where she wants to accept any kind of spiritual or devotional practice. I mean, why would you? You have just shat and puked yourself. Although for some people, that's the perfect time to invite something in. But yeah, I think there was an element of it, but I think it was more that he was trying to manage his daughter, because if they had a problem with it from a religious perspective, I think there might have been more resistance there. They don't seem like they're so hardcore Christian that they can't put turmeric paste on someone's feet, for example.
You would hope not. I mean, there was a lot of it which was, to be fair, I think a lot of the parents' slight sort of defensiveness and grumpiness does come from looking out for her in whatever sense. I think they are, you know, they want her to have a good time, but also not to feel neglected or shut out or all that kind of stuff. The one overriding impression I got throughout the whole thing, and I mean, it did seem to last, you know, 3 or 4 days, at least in my timeline, was that she was complaining about perfectly valid things like, oh, nobody's told me where I'm supposed to be or what the timing is, or I thought we were late, but actually we're not late. It's slightly like one of those plays you see, which is perfectly good and perfectly satisfactory and amusing, except that by that stage, somebody would just have asked what was happening in real life. And yet this is, you know, as real as it gets, and no one has. No one said, actually, sorry, can I just stop you there? This is clearly all bullshit. I know we've got a language problem, but we'll find a third person. We'll settle this down. Can you just tell me what's happening, when it's happening, why it's happening, where the toilet roll is, and why I decided to wear pale colours, because that clearly was a bad idea. You know, it's, you would think that ordinary life and basic common sense would have stepped in. And yet it hasn't. Maybe they have no common sense. Maybe I'm expecting too much. I don't know. But it just, there was a sort of slight feeling of people walking through rooms and not talking to each other, and a weird kind of sort of airport farce thing about it.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm also aware, and I've not been to an Indian wedding personally. I've only been to either the bride or groom were Indian, and they had done the Indian wedding already, and now they were doing the English one. But the nature of the Judeo-Christian wedding is that there is normally a timetable, and it is planned out. And some people, even by necessity, go as far as, you know, we're taking this photo at this time, and then that thing at that time. I wouldn't be able to operate in that way. And as you know, famously, I was probably an hour late to my wedding. So, as is the bride's prerogative. So there is, when you're in Jaipur on the ground, I don't know that there is that same sense of urgency once everyone is in the same place at the same time and you're not dealing with a florist who has multiple deliveries on that day. For me, it would be having to, I'm not a patient person to begin with, obviously. If I don't have a book or my phone or something to entertain me and I'm in the heat for long periods of time and there's nobody constantly bringing me water. And hey, maybe she's looking for a sneaky 15 minutes in the schedule where she and Yash can, you know, get up to a little something, something.
I think from his point of view, that would be a risky attempt at that particular time. You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, this is a woman who within living memory has been shitting all over the floor.
Yeah, that's true.
I would just say, you know, I think you're lovely. I think it's great that you're about to marry my brother and that we can do all sorts of things which are against the law of God and the law of nature. But I just don't think we should do that right now because you might just shit yourself. And I'm not into that. I mean, some people are. Don't get me wrong. That's fine. You do you. But I think it was just it's a potential danger that I wouldn't introduce into what is already a slightly hyped up on danger scenario.
So let's make a brief stopover in Mexico. I guess they're back in La Misión now. So Kenny and Armando, now you've only been recently introduced to Kenny and Armando, right?
Very recently. I knew very little about them, but was sort of picking up bits and pieces of information as I went. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you've been fortunate in that you haven't had to see too much of the back and forth of, are they going to have a baby? Are they going to move to Mexico City? Sadly, you did miss them going to a gay club or a gay bar in Mexico City. But you know,
I may go back through the lost episodes on Amazon and see what it's like.
It was very enjoyable. It was an interesting aesthetic though, because they seem to have decided, that they were after the owners of the bar. I mean, that they were after the pink peso, and they, rather than, you know, necessarily being gay themselves and thinking, what do we want? How do we want to present this? They thought, okay, let's put a very odd painting of Madonna on the wall. Let's put Freddie Mercury over there. Let's maybe paint the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco as a way. Let's dress all the bartenders as the village people. They weren't going for any particular aesthetic or theme. It was just, that's kind of gay, right? ?
That kind of, no, wait, I've got this. I met someone gay once.
Yes, exactly.
That said, I think there is a lot of joy, and I've experienced this, admittedly, more in retrospect than at the time, in gay clubs and bars which are really, really awkward and not really very comfortable with the whole fact that they are, particularly in smaller towns and cities, I've found. It's nearly 20 years since I lived in Edinburgh, but when I was there in the mid-2000s, although, you know, it's... you know, like it had a proportionate gay population to whatever the size of Edinburgh is, but there wasn't much of a gay scene that I was aware of, or that gay friends who lived elsewhere were aware of. So there were about three or four obviously gay clubs or bars. And there was one at the top of Leith Walk called Club Habana, because they'd obviously thought, that sounds a bit gay, doesn't it? You would go in, and admittedly, I was dragged in by a friend sort of mid to late afternoon, which is never really a good time to go to a club or bar of any kind, whether it's...
Yeah, but, you know, the sun is down. It's already the middle of the night. It's pitch black outside. You might as well.
Yeah, and you are starting to feel that maybe Papa Hemingway took the right way out after all. Yeah, I mean, it was very Club Havana in that respect. But, I mean, it was one of those places where... you know, it's just off Leith Walk, so, you know, right on the main street. So because Edinburgh is quite a touristy town, you could see that there were at least two or three people there who were, how should we put this, not fully aware of the profound nature of the establishment, who had thought, ooh, I quite fancy a coffee, and had popped into Club Habana because that looks nice, and had, well, actually, no, they probably hadn't yet realised that they dramatically misread the situation, but they would probably come to. Anyway, I was sitting with my friend, and I excused myself to go to the bathroom at one point, and I swear I was away maybe 3 minutes. And when I got back, my friend was talking to a young man who was probably in his late teens, maybe early 20s, and had explained to him that he and I were a couple, and that we were, and I quote, all dressed up, by which I mean like wearing shirts, because we'd just been to my sister's confirmation. And I thought that was such a set of brilliant lies to have constructed seamlessly within the space of my going to urinate and coming back. But it was quite extraordinary. And it should have made me feel more awkward, but I actually thought at this stage, you know, all bets are off. You know, I'm now in a relationship with one of my best friends, and we're all dressed up for my sister's confirmation. My sister hadn't just been confirmed, by the way. I do have a sister. I can confirm that. But there was no sense in which there's any religious nature to the scenario. But I thought it spoke very well of his remarkable skills of improvisation, and also of setting out that kind of scene in a way which had not said to the quite handsome young boy, this is clearly a scenario from which you are therefore excluded. It was kind of, this is what's happening, pull up a chair, have a drink, why don't we chat? So it was very, very strange. I think that set the scene for a lot of the relatively few in number experiences in gay clubs and bars I had in Edinburgh. So, yeah. It wasn't Weimar in the late 20s, let's put it that way.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No, and of course, we were both there in a previous life, Weimar in the 1920s, so we can speak to that.
Absolutely. Some warnings, I think it wasn't even a previous life, but yes.
Girl, me too. There are moments, I have to tell you, when I was watching that Christopher Isherwood film, or the film about Christopher Isherwood, I swear it could have been a conversation between you and I today.
There were some extraordinary bits. I mean, I was slightly baffled by its concept in the sense that I saw that, I think I watched it on Amazon, and I thought, hang on, there's a film about Christopher Isherwood in Weimar, Berlin, well, in Berlin, in Weimar, Germany, in the early 30s, and I've not seen it. How is this even possible? Not only had I not seen it, I hadn't even heard that it existed.
Either. It was like on Channel 5. It was so good.
It was amazing. Really, very good.
What was the name of it? If people want to, I mean, no one's going to be able to. Ooh. Maybe if you have a VPN, you can find it. But what was it? Christopher and his kind.
Yes, Christopher and his kind.
Now, I don't know if you can hearken that far back, Elliot, because is it 11 years between you and your sister? Or how old were you when your sister was born?
Yes, I was. I think I was. Yeah, 11. That sounds right. We'll say 11. Yeah, so she'll criticize me afterwards.
Alfie's age. What? How did you receive that news? Because you were, and Alfie is a lot like this too. You were 40 when you were 10, mentally.
I'm not going downwards. I'm only going up. I think my view at the time was, well, that's a situation. That's a situation about which I have no influence, so it'll probably be fine. And you know, to give my sister her credit, largely has been fine. She's fine. She's marvelous, obviously, and you know, a very remarkably balanced and sane and grown up person. But yeah, I think based on my experience and also, you know, having met people, I think it's a very tricky issue to be talking to kids about them acquiring siblings of whatever age. And what I thought, although this was only a sort of brief sort of interlude into it for me, I thought a lot of what went on with that group was very interesting, because I wasn't sure that they had really grasped that, although I'm sure she's a very intelligent child and has a good handle on what's going on, she is still a child, and mm-hmm. she's not going to give entirely rational answers or can be entirely expected to have rational reactions to what's going on in the world. So when you say to her, do you want a little brother or something? It's not like saying to an adult, you know, are you willing to take out a payday loan based on the following terms and sign at the bottom? That's not the level she's operating at. And I thought that was particularly demonstrated when she said that she wanted to share a room with the baby. You're thinking, no, you don't, kid. You just don't, under any circumstances. It might be a great idea in your head. It probably happened in insert own 11-year-old girl's cultural reference, because you'll be quite pleased to know I can't think of any.
But, that's reassuring.
Well, absolutely. At least I'm not saying that. Was it volume 6 or volume 5? You know, it may be a lovely idea in her head, but the realities are it's completely impractical. It will be hell for her. It's not going to work. No, bad idea. And I thought that was slightly reflective of the whole thing, that they were clearly with the best of intentions. They were sort of sidling up to these questions and trying to frame them in ways that she would understand and that made her feel empowered and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, these are questions which actually have consequences. And they're consequences that you can't just undo because your 11-year-old kid has changed his mind.
Right. By the way, I don't think she is 11. I think she's 8 or 9. I could be wrong, but she's a bit younger than that.
More so in that case. You know, she is still growing up. She is a child, and she will, for perfectly good and obvious reasons, not always have the same views 2 days running or 2 hours running. And she will not understand fully the consequences of things she thinks she wants, because children don't. That's one of the great things about being a child. You can do something and you don't think, oh God, but what if this happens?
Kenny is 60, I think. Yeah, or late 50s at least. So, and again, yeah, certainly doesn't look it, but, he also has 4 grown children of his own. He is a grandfather. And I'm not saying that any of those things should be barriers, but, it is a radical act of hope.
Yes, which is the sort of thing which keeps the world turning, but also the sort of thing that keeps, you know, therapists in very good business.
Yes. Now, having said that, they're in a much better position financially to be able to do this, I think. And Kenny is very practical in that sense. So I'm not worried about them, you know, making a reckless decision, unlike our next couple, Mary and Brandan.
My dear old Mary and Brandan, yes.
I I don't have a whole lot to say about this couple that's nice or favorable. I know a lot of our listeners sympathize heavily with both of them and with Brandan in particular.
There is a lot of there are a lot of danger signs here, aren't there? And they seem to rush towards the danger signs with a degree of kind of clenched teeth glee about them. You know, I'm not going to enjoy this, but I'm really going to enjoy not enjoying it. I thought the sort of microcosm of the whole thing for me was that where Brandan says, oh, you know, are you saying, and you never frame this as part of an argument, are you saying that it would just be better if I wasn't here?
It's really, I mean, I was gobsmacked. I was truly speechless when in a previous episode, we catch up with Brandan and he is asleep on a bench in the town square. I think that Brandan is clinically depressed. I think that he is, you know, in his own words, he was not thinking about the rules when he and Mary expressed their love for each other physically. They were trying to have a baby.
In fairness, if they were trying for a baby, they hit on one of the best ways of becoming pregnant, certainly.
They sure did.
Do it. That's
they sure did.
More effective than a lot of ways.
And where I'm stuck with this relationship really is that Brandan is taking it seriously, and he's making an oath in the presence of Lolo and his psychedelic waistcoat. That things will change and they'll stop fighting. But when you don't have a model for that, and you don't have a model for healthy behavior, and you don't seem to have any kind of direction to look in for that help. Now, granted, Mary's grandparents are probably our age. And have just had a really hard life. But I don't see how things can change when their circumstances are not going to change and they have nowhere to look and seemingly no awareness about what the source of the problems they're having are.
And I think also, and this is probably an age function as much as anything else, they seem to have some belief that if you say things are going to be different, then they almost already are. And you think, that's not how it works. You kind of say things and then you make it happen. It's not some sort of magical incantatory device that cures your problems, which was a bit of the difficulty I had with the sort of way that Brandan was, you know, with all earnestness, I'm sure, trying to reassure Lolo and his unusual spiritual and sartorial outlook, that it would all be fine, that he was going to make it better and things like that. I mean, it's basically, and I'm sure we've said this before, it's two kids playing at having a relationship. But with the differences that A, it's really happening, and B, mm-hmm. the only notion of a relationship they have is a really shit one. So it's not a set of affairs which is going easily to make a happy recipe, is it?
No. No. And again, Lolo says it would be great for them to get married because once they're married, they'll live a peaceful life without any trouble and none of this bad stuff will happen.
I've heard that's almost universally true. Yeah. There's something about the idea that, you know, marriage is not transformative in the sense that they hope it will be. It's not, if I may quote the great sage and child's entertainer Rastamouse, going to make a bad thing good. It's you know, that's not to say that people who marry young will never be happy. Of course they will sometimes, although, you know, statistically the odds are lengthening these days, but it you're still you at the end of it.
These two people are so in need of separate intensive mental health intervention. even then, I would think, yeah, let's put off marriage. And I know it's too late to put off having children, right? But let's maybe not tie ourselves down. Let's take the permanence and that kind of pressure out of this situation. Now, I have saved the best for last, not surprisingly. I have been dying to cover this scene with you and looking forward to it all week. Shekinah and Sarper, there are so many brilliant quotes, and I've tried to write down all of them. It's almost impossible to parody. Now, we have a thriving Turkish community here in London. Certainly in West London, where you are and where I used to live, there are some fabulous restaurants, reliably delicious food. I have not come across the dish that involves pressing spices into raw meat. Have you?
I haven't, no. I mean, I'm not an expert on Turkish or Levantine food in general, but I would say that one of the threads of continuity throughout it is cooking. You know, just actually cooking meat. Relatively rarely have I found that I've been presented with a dish and they said, well, it's some really nicely spiced meat and some other bits and pieces. And then we thought we just miss out the bit where we take the diseases out of it. And we thought we'd just shove it to you because it's warm from my hands. And you think that doesn't make it more attractive. That makes it a lot less attractive, particularly if your hands are attached to the rest of Sarper, because I know where he's been. So, I did wonder if he was trolling her. He's sitting there with this obvious hostile figure at the table. And, you know, mm-hmm. one can dissect her hostility in a number of ways. He's not stupid. Well, okay, we'll part that. He must pick up on some of the hostility coming from her, because she's not concealing it at all. And yet he's almost goading her by saying he's going to make this very special meal and he wants to show how much it means to him having her there and how he wants to impress her. And he's basically mashing up some mince in his big, sweaty, shovel-like hands. And that is going to be dolloped on her plate somehow. And she did at one point say, brilliantly, so raw meat. And you think, yeah, you've hit it on the head. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I would have done anything not to have to eat that. He says he takes great pains to bring up in front of the cameras that he weighs her every day and that he ensures that her hair is done a certain way. What's your view on that? Do you think that's something that's actually happening? Does she like it? Does she object to it? She seemed to have a ready rebuttal for, you know, anyone who might say, gee, Shekinah, that sounds like something that's really gross and controlling and unhealthy.
Cellar recently? Yes. I think depending on which bits I focused on, there were different ways of looking at it. Because if one takes at face value that his English is not very good, well, no, sorry, that's unfair. His English is a lot better than my Turkish. His English is not perfect, and there are bits of idiom that he misses and bits of nuance, which is fine. Of course he does. If one takes that on board, then there are bits where I thought he's actually trying to say something quite nice and sincere and he's just not getting it across and she's maybe being a bit harsh on him for not accepting that. And then there are other times where you think, oh my God, if he's not on the FBI's wanted list, I don't know why. Because this is clearly a man who would build a woman out of parts. There was a bit where she was trying to explain to him, this was in the sort of very last moments before her sister landed in every sense, where she was saying, oh, you know, don't say that, babe, because, it, you know, to somebody who doesn't understand, they might think it means this and that. It was as if, yeah, maybe he has just misrepresented something. But then you think, actually, no, what he was saying was that he always wants you to look the best you can be, brackets, because it reflects well on him. And actually, it was all a bit gnarly and a bit disgusting, really, wasn't it? I don't know if this is just the collision of two extraordinary polarities of narcissism, which it may be. I think what's odd is that both of them seem to be both narcissists, but also quite dim, which is a relatively unusual combination. Narcissists at least sometimes have a bit of self-awareness and spark about them. Well, self-awareness is the wrong way of putting it, obviously. But, I mean, he just doesn't seem to know what's going on most of the time, or care what's going on, because, you know, he's got his bed that he slept with 1,200 women in, and my God, just logistically, it looks that way. He's got his awful flat, which he had a massive fit about the idea of changing anything in. You're thinking, mate, an arsonist would change this place for the better. They really would.
The thing is, I think, and I know I shouldn't, but I really like Shekinah. And I think that she is very, there is a warmth to her. And as shallow as her affect is, and as, I don't know. I really do think that there are some hidden depths there. I do not feel the way about that way about him, but I think he is a terrible actor. And I think that if he was putting this on, and if this was for the show and all fake, he wouldn't be able to disguise it. I don't believe for a second that he's slept with 2,000 women or 1,200. I think he's maybe slept with 30. This whole, so Shariah shows up again, damning with faint praise, saying that she wasn't expecting Turkey to be so pretty. And then we go to the dinner conversation, where again, it is cinematic in its artistry, the push and pull, the tension, the highs and lows. I think the highlight of this is, if she's texting, she acts like a slut, you know? And then Shariah says, "You're saying my sister acts like a slut?" To which Sarper responds, "I meant bitch."
That is a brilliantly male recovery, isn't it? Oh, no, sorry, I didn't mean slut, I meant bitch.
I meant bitch. I think Shariah was a little offsides here. I don't think it's fair. Now, is this the actual home that he lives in? We'll never know. Is it an Airbnb? Is it a rental? Has he seen these empty alcohol bottles in his entire life? Who knows? Right? But Shariah doesn't know him and is a guest in his home. And again, I'm not eating the raw meat with sand and protein poop germs and all manner of gym diseases in it. I'm finding a polite way to avoid eating it. But what I'm not going to do is attack someone right off the bat who's hosting me.
The weird, now I think about it, that interchange about the alcohol bottles in the cupboard was weirder and weirder, because it was like everybody was doing improv and not particularly well. It was kind of, yes, I keep them because they remind me of my friends, he said, thinking, is that a thing that humans do? I don't know. And then one of them says, oh, yeah, but you know, it makes you look like you drink loads. And he says, no, there's no alcohol in them. I'm thinking, I don't know, is there? I haven't tried. And it's just, it was all like a weird set of, a weird sort of game of building Jeopardy based on an object that nobody had examined. It was fascinating. But none of them willing to call out the fact that this was just a really odd situation that none of them knew what was happening. Because, you know, there was far too much pride in it for that.
I'm surprised that they even raised the specter of their immediate surroundings, because these two, at least, and possibly Shariah as well. I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but these two seem to live exclusively online. That's all right in a way if you're like a particular, for a particular generation, 'twas ever thus. There is no difference that because that is the real world. And I think maybe ours is the last generation possibly ever to have that difference between, okay, these are the people that I know in real life. I don't know. This is my avatar and how I present. I mean, not that, sorry, I am waffling on way too long now, but what I'm coming around to is this conversation of about the DMs.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if Robin wants to, I've never been somebody who's felt the need to look at my partner's phone ever.
No.
If Robin wants to see my DMs, if my mom wants to see my DMs, I don't care because I'm not doing anything in my DMs that I shouldn't be doing. Sarper feels very differently. He says, I will show you DMs, but you will show your panties because it's your private area.
I'm not really sure that's quite how it works, but I just pray that he's never arrested and asked to show his sort of private correspondence by the Turkish police. You know, I show you DMs, but you show me your panties, Mr. Policeman. It's your private area. I mean, it's okay. I have a slightly mixed set of views on this, which are sort of independent thoughts which may or may not have a thread between them. The first thing is, you don't ask to see your partner's DMs as a sort of wonderful optimism-infused demonstration of how little they have to hide from you. You just don't. Because why would you? I mean, it's like saying, oh, show me how you never think about anyone else and never say anything you wouldn't want printed across the front of the Daily Mail and have absolutely no interior life that I am not I'm not privy to or would not want to see anything of. You say it because you think, even if the speck of doubt is the size of one of the bits of sand on Sarper's fun hand-baked mince cakes, even if it's minuscule, it's there. And, you know, you're also never going to get an answer you want. Because if you don't see what you're looking for, you'll think, well, I just haven't seen it. And if you see it, then, of course, it'll be, you know, all that kind of thing.
I think all of this could have been resolved if he had done an erotic dance routine for Shariah.
I think that was what was missing. I mean, she was clearly, I think a lot of her hostility was clearly sort of sublimated sexual desire. I think,
yeah, because who wouldn't want a G.I. Joe from 1988?
Yeah, and you know, once he starts smearing the mints on himself, I think that's the, you know, so the deal is done. I think clearly she couldn't cope with just the depth and profundity of her desire for him. And so she became very hostile. And I think that's true of a lot of women, obviously. I joke, listeners.
Yes.
I joke. But yeah, I mean, I think an erotic dance would have distracted. I mean, it's a bit like that phrase in Blackadder when someone says, as I came in, all heads turned. And Blackadder says, yes. And I dare say a few stomachs too. And I think there is no element of that about the idea of Sarper doing an erotic dance, which of course he will do with complete commitment because in his head, it is the sexiest thing any woman, girl, bitch, slut, whatever you want to call them, has seen.
Sure. Whore. Yeah. Right. I have a hard out at one. I do appreciate your time. Our listeners appreciate
Absolute
your
pleasure.
Time. Elliot will be resuming his shift on the driving the tow bus next week. Thank you all for listening. Again, come at us on our socials at Blady Day on Instagram and whatever Twitter's called now, although you can probably understand from how I've said that, that I don't check that as often as I do the others. Join our Facebook group, Blighty Day Bays. Bays is spelled B-A-I. No, it isn't. B-A-E-S. Patreon.com/BlightyDayBays. Elliot, tell them where to find you.
I am more active perhaps than that on X, formerly Twitter, as almost every article I've seen refers to it. Elliot Wilson 2, ELIOTWILSON2. So do pop over and join in the group of people who think I'm inadequate for one reason or another. And my God, there have been quite a few reasons these past few weeks, but it's always fun. Just to say thank you again for having me on. It's always a pleasure and always a deep dive into the broad but sometimes shallow pool of human experience around the world.
I look forward to seeing you on Monday in person, y'all.
Very much so.
I'm going to see a play. Very exciting. The details of which I will reveal in good time. Again, not sure. And that good time can be now, because why not? I don't know how I'm going to feel watching King Lear so close to the anniversary of my father's passing, but I'm going to power through. I might be sobbing the whole time, and
that's all right.
You might have to be that awkward person patting me on the back and saying, there.
Don't worry, I'm that awkward person wherever I go, so it's not too much.
It won't be a new experience. All right, take care, listeners. Let us know your thoughts, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.